Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Listen to KMOX anytime, anywhere. Download the radio.com app today.
Mr. Trump has magic about him.
This is the greatest country in the world, but we do have some really stupid people.
How can I describe our leaders better than the word stupid?
This guy has magic coming out his ears.
This is the most unethical sham.
So in the words of my late friend Aretha Franklin, show some R-E-S-P-I-C-T.
Now, Mark Reardon.
I've never known a guy more talented at untangling politics so that anyone can understand.
On St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
All right, we got some technical difficulties I have to work through. This happened yesterday, so the only tool of my trade that I have outside of my microphone are my headphones, ladies and gentlemen. My headphones are near and dear to me. I've worn them my entire life. Not this particular pair, but they're shorting out, and it's on the right earphone. The reason I bring it up is because Dave Klein's in here right now. I'm going to need you. Right now they're working okay. I'm going to need you to kind of stand right behind me over my right shoulder to sort of hold your hand right on that wire on the right side.
Fiddle with the wire? Okay, I can do that.
Just leave it right there. I move my head, you move your hand.
I can do that.
Okay?
I got nothing else to do.
My head goes right, your hand goes right. You got it?
I'm like the guy that follows the Rams head coach to keep him on the sidelines.
Exactly.
You seen that guy? Yeah,
exactly.
See, I'm that version for you.
All right, as long as you know your role
here
this
afternoon.
Okay,
that's fine. I can
do
that.
All right, because right now they're working great. I have to go to Guitar Center and pick up some new pair. These are the you know how I know that these, I've told you this in the past, these are MDR7506
and nobody
Sony
knows
headphones.
What that means.
Well, it just sounds fancy, right? But what does it say there on the side of the headphones right there? What does it say?
Professional.
It says professional.
So
Dave,
why are you wearing them?
That's why I know I'm a professional, because it says it on the headphones. Professional.
They're lying to you.
Yes, they are. All right. Now it went, see, I took them off to read the professional thing and get over here.
Okay, I got to get in position.
On to important stuff. Joe Strom from the Cardinal. I turned my own mic down like an idiot, too. There you go. My only tools, my microphone and my headphones. I messed them up. Joe Strom from the Cardinals with us as we get started this afternoon, because we got to talk about, not to jinx anything, postseason ticket sales. Joe, how are you?
I am doing well. I learned you're a professional today, so I learned something.
I know. That's the first time you ever thought of me in those terms, for sure. But no, let's look. Last night was a big win. Certainly, they're all big. I can't take this, though. I'm, like, wriggling on my couch and very nervous. I'm a very nervous sports watcher overall, but this is tight. And, you know, you think about the implications of last night, and we could have been down to one game, right?
Exactly right. It's crazy. You play so many games over a 5.5 month period, and it always comes down to the last 2 weeks of the season. And but it's exciting. It's exciting to be in this position, and it's going to be a lot of fun baseball to watch over the next 2 weeks.
All right. Information for the fans as we get closer to October. What do they need to know right now about the potential for postseason tickets?
Yeah, the key is the potential first two rounds, either the wild card game or the National League Division Series tickets. Those are going to go on sale Thursday on the 19th at noon. And there's two different ways that the people can purchase. You can go online, which is probably the best way to do it, at cardinals.com, or you can also purchase over the phone at 314-345-9000. Those are the only two ways that you can purchase single game tickets for the potential wild card game or the National League Division Series.
I don't really want to talk much about the wild card game, but I guess certainly it potentially could be in the mix, but certainly Division Series. And then beyond that, what happens for future series?
What we will do is we'll have in future series in the next next 10 days or so, we'll have more information for the league championship series as to when those will go on sale. And then further down the road with the potential World Series, we will actually, you'll have to register to have the opportunity to purchase those. Hey, that will be a registration.
And one thing, Joe, I want to mention, maybe I missed it, I don't think you did, but this is all going to be delivered on the MLB app, right?
That is correct. The individual tickets for postseason will all be delivered on the MLB app, and that is something that's a little different this year, but it's not something new. Quite frankly, a lot of our fans have it delivered that way throughout the year. They choose to have it done that way.
Joe Strome from the Cardinals this afternoon, Vice President of Ticket Sales. Let's hope for good things. I feel pretty positive. I really do. I love what Marcell Ozuna did last night because he's been off a little bit. And these guys just seem to have something right now. And obviously didn't turn out so well on Sunday. But these, you know, those things happen to all teams in baseball. Ask the Washington Nationals. I think we did it to them one time, didn't we?
Exactly right. And the reality is all the teams are good teams that we're playing right now. And so these are going to be fun games to watch. And you said it best earlier, everyone's on the edge of their seat watching the games. I'm amazed at how these athletes perform under the pressure that they do.
All right, Joe, thanks. We'll talk soon.
Thank you.
Hopefully many times here over the course of the next month with ticket details. All right, lots to get to here this afternoon. We have Josh Krossauer, who's a Washington Nationals fan, which is why he set up from the National Journal to talk a little politics this afternoon. Really interesting testimony from Corey Lewandowski as he goes against the Democrats on Capitol Hill in a hearing. I want to give a little bit of an update here on the Brett Kavanaugh story. And, you know, I've said many, many times over the course of the last couple of years that I think that the enemy of the people line from the president is sort of over the top and ridiculous. But I've also said many times, probably starting more often last fall during the Kavanaugh hearings, that I think I agree with him on that front more and more just because of the egregious media malpractice. And this fresh assassination of Brett Kavanaugh's character is one of the most shameful things. Every time I think I've seen shameful behavior on the part of the New York Times or the Washington Post or one of the big networks, it just gets more egregious. And this is unbelievable. Now, let me give a little credit to CBS News, although they buried this at the back end of the story. But here's Jan Crawford talking about something that I let you know about yesterday, the fact that Leland Kaiser, this great friend of Christine Blasey Ford's, has not only no recollection of any of these things, said it was very unlikely that a party like that even would have happened along those lines, and she would have attended it.
Speaking publicly for the first time to the Times reporters, Ford's close friend Leland Kaiser, who Ford said was at the party, said she didn't believe Ford's account and that it just didn't make any sense. She also said she told the FBI that Ford's allies pressured her to say otherwise.
So that seemingly is a pretty big story. Why wouldn't you, as a New York Times reporter, let's see if we can focus on witness tampering, because that sounds pretty significant. But it's not about that, because it's about bringing down Trump. Here's a story related to this. I thought this was interesting in Vanity Fair. Let me see if I could source it here. Who wrote it? I don't know who wrote it, but I'm just going to panic. Somehow the print left off who wrote it. But the story was about why this story ended up in the New York Times, not on the news page, but basically on the opinion page. And the story in Vanity Fair says conservatives weren't the only ones screaming. In liberal corners, the Times came under fire for running the Kavanaugh revelations in the paper's Sunday review section. The review is under the purview of the opinion department, as opposed to the news pages, where, according to the logic, the story would have carried more weight. Moreover, some critics took issue with the notion of Times reporters withholding newsworthy information to coincide with the publication of their book. That's a legitimate point. That is indeed a tricky thing for the Times to navigate, especially as more reporters than ever are landing book deals. It's not as if books by Times reporters don't get covered in the news pages. So you have this Harvey Weinstein book from Jody Kantor and Megan Toohey just last week. Well, that landed in the news section. So they don't have a hard and fast rule, but just keep that in mind as I describe what this person also wrote. So why did the Kavanaugh excerpt end up in the review? People familiar with how things went down told me that Kelly and Pergerman, the two that wrote the book and that are featured here, initially pitched their scoop to the news side, but the top editors ultimately felt there wasn't enough juice to warrant a story there, let alone a big page one treatment, the type many lefties would have been salivating for. Instead, that's not my word, that's the Vanity Fair piece. Instead, Pogerbrin and Kelly were told that they could pitch the review, which is entirely independent of the news department. I asked for clarification as to what the story wasn't news pages worthy. or what about the story wasn't news pages worthy, but the Times declined to comment, as did Kelly and Pergerbrin. A Times spokesperson did, however, point out that it's not unusual for opinion in the review pieces to break news. So then they go on, the two reporters, or I think maybe just Robin Pergerbrin, goes on with Lawrence O'Donnell. And Lawrence O'Donnell tries to walk her through all these things and the mistake that the Times made by not putting that note at the end in the original story about how the witness, the person at the center of the story that allegedly had Brett Kavanaugh's penis in her hand, doesn't remember anything about it.
Draft of the article, did it include those words that have since been added to the article?
It did.
So somewhere in the editing process, those words were
trapped.
Yeah,
I mean, I think what happened actually was that, you know, we had her name, and you know, the Times doesn't usually include the name of the victim. And so I think in this case, the editors felt like maybe it was probably better to remove it. And in removing her name, they removed the other reference to the fact that she didn't remember
it. Okay, so the way...
By the way, isn't that convenient? It's just a little editing mistake. That's how it went down.
In your draft for the Times, you used basically the exact words
yes,
that are in the
did.
Book that I deliberately left off the name
exactly.
because that passage begins with the name.
Yes.
And so in their removal of the name, they ended up removing
the whole
what
sentence.
Follows it.
Yes. And I mean, so I think it was just sort of an editing, you know, done in the haste of, in the editing process, as you know, for
were
closing
you, were
the section.
You involved in the-
you know, just it's a quick editing mistake at the New York Times. These things, come on, nothing to see here. Even though it changes the nature of the entire story. The story is no longer newsworthy because it's been discredited on several fronts. In fact, the story is that there were people working behind the scenes, we now know, pressuring Christine Blasey Ford and others to come forward. I think that that warrants further investigation by someone who claims to be a journalist or a newspaper that claims to be one of the leading media outlets in the entire country. The Gray Lady, right?
To amend this and do the correction on the addition online to the piece?
We discussed it. Yeah, I mean, we think we felt like this. There was so much heat. You know, there's so much, everyone has been kind of seizing on various aspects of this that we certainly didn't want this to be an issue anymore. And we certainly never intended to mislead in any way. We wanted to give as full a story as possible.
Now, I just spit Diet Coke out of my nose hearing that one. Because, of course, they intended to mislead. Because if they didn't mislead, they would have no book and they would have no story. This is one of the most, it really is one of the most stunning things that I've come across in media malpractice. I'd love to talk with Bernie Goldberg about this. I have to check and see if Bernie has written about it because he's always great. He's the guy that wrote the book Bias more than 20 years ago after working at CBS News. And if you don't think that these decisions are being made, look, even the editors in the news section saw the red flags on this one at the New York Times. They're like, we don't want any part of this. And they still stepped into it.
You're listening to The Mark Reardon Show.
When you're out of my sight, you must constantly Twitter me exactly what you're up to.
Follow Mark on Twitter at Mark Reardon, KMOX.
One of our Inside the Swamp guys, Josh Krausauer, coming up. Going to talk politics. Or are we?
Zimmerman gets back in, and here's the 0-1. Swinging a line drive into center field. There's a center fielder. Cardinals win this one 4-2.
Uh-oh. Strasburg. Down goes Strasburg, Krausauer. What do you think about that?
I'm thinking we've got two more games to win the series. We are in. We, you know, you. This is a pennant race. We only have a. We need you guys to beat the Cubs. By the way, the seven games left on the schedule. So, you know, the Cardinals. You know, we hope we win the series, but it's more and more important that the Cubs don't catch us and the Brewers too. I guess they're also in that wild.
Yeah, you know what? I would be more worried about the Brewers right now because my sense would be that we would win. Well, hopefully, because I think we're going to be on the outside looking in if we don't win the majority of those games with the Cubs. But man, this is really. I had Joe Strom, my friend, who's the vice president of ticket sales, at the start of the show because. Because not unlike the Nationals, I'm sure, you know, you have to do some pre-planning for postseason tickets, but it's nerve-wracking, isn't it?
It really, I mean, this is deja vu all over again. And we have a tough schedule. We have the toughest schedule out of all the teams left in the playoff hunt. And the Cardinals, the Braves, the Phillies. And, you know, we need you guys to do us a favor, but our bullpen, I mean, our offense has been fine. It's been a little inconsistent lately, but that bullpen has been tough for us all year. And I'm nervous, even if we do make the playoffs, that we'll be able to hold these narrow leads that are all part of playoff baseball.
You got to get in. You got to get in. You don't know what's going to happen after that. Let's talk a little politics here. Corey Lewandowski, let me play just a quick cut from this because he's invited to Capitol Hill. He's sort of in enemy territory.
During the 2016 election cycle, Mr. Trump held no elected position. He was not a government official. Rather, the Obama-Biden administration and the intelligence community, overseen by James Clapper, Jim Comey, and John Brennan, had the responsibility to the American people to ensure the integrity of the 2016 election. I will leave it to this committee and the American public to decide how successful or not they were in doing their jobs.
So, Josh, he's kind of flipping it around there a little bit, very defiantly saying, look, it was the Obama administration that should have been responsible for making sure these elections were clean.
Yeah, this is a rehash of those same partisan arguments over Mueller, over the Russia investigation. There's a lot of political theater, not a lot of political substance to this hearing. Jerry Nadler, the Judiciary Committee chairman, who's trying to score some points sort of as Pelosi's point person on the investigations, was having limited success in trying to get Lewandowski to answer his questions. But you know, there's also a down-ballot political component to this. Lewandowski may be running for the Senate in New Hampshire, and I think President Trump tweeted at him promoting Lewandowski's testimony. I mean, to win the Republican nomination, to be the Senate nominee, this is golden footage for someone like Lewandowski, who's not always in the public eye anymore.
What say ye about, and I spent a little time here in the opening segment on this New York Times debacle. I mean, this is an embarrassment for the New York Times on this Kavanaugh thing, rehashing this.
It is journalistic malpractice,
yes.
And it's surprising that the New York Times, it does seem that there may have been some miscommunication between adapting the book for the newspaper print edition, but the fact that you basically push a narrative and exclude key facts in terms of this secondhand allegation from this guy at Yale who claims that there was some sexual misconduct, even when the alleged victim says nothing happened or she doesn't remember anything happening. I mean, you don't even have an FBI investigation from secondhand rumors. So it takes a victim, someone to report a crime or misdeed for the FBI to investigate anything in the first place. So this is all a lot of smoke and no fire. From a media point of view is what is my first reaction. I'm just stunned that the New York Times, which has traditionally had really high standards, that they would report something that's so flimsily sourced.
All right, so going back to the debate last week, I'm actually starting to feel sorry for Joe Biden because I don't think this is going well, and I don't think it's going to continue to go well for Joe Biden. And I, you know, I think even I've seen some liberals comment, if Joe Biden ends up on a debate stage with Donald Trump, it's not going to be pretty.
It may not be pretty, though, and it wasn't pretty for Hillary Clinton, who was a better debater, I think, than Joe Biden. What's remarkable, that we've seen these stumbles and these gaffes by Joe Biden, and yet his poll numbers are pretty stable. He's about 30% in the Democratic primary field. And I agree with you, Mark, that he has run a pretty underwhelming campaign, one that's been marked by a lot of missteps and poor debate performances. But you look at the biggest alternatives right now in the national polls, and it's Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. And if you're a moderate, if you're someone who wants to, you know, maybe win an election, or if you don't view, you know, taking away private health insurance as a big priority, alternative to Joe Biden for a lot of these Democrats? So, you know, that's the problem. I mean, is there an alternative to Joe Biden that is electable against Trump? And until someone, you know, like a Cory Booker, maybe an Amy Klobuchar emerges, I think Biden is still going to be in that first place position.
Yeah, no, I think you're right about that. And I understand why there would be a desire to win the election outside of focusing on one of the, you know, Michael Moore said it a few weeks ago. Look, they could win the election by 6 million this time in the popular vote and still lose with the Electoral College. So you have to find someone who can win those states that matter for sure. All right, Josh, I cannot say best of luck to you. I was surprised that we got on Strasburg early last night. His pitch count was up pretty early. So maybe that gives us a little bit of hope here for the rest of this series. We got afternoon baseball tomorrow, which means I'll be working from the High Ridge office for part of the day, and we will exchange many baseball messages in the next few weeks. And I'll say best of luck to you because we're going to beat the Cubs.
I'll say best of luck to you against the Cubs. We need you guys to come through. So there we go.
All right, Josh, we'll talk soon. Take care. He's a huge baseball fan, and if you follow him on Twitter, you'll certainly see that. It's 228 at KMOX.
Get ready for the Cards and Nationals tonight. Emerald Total Access, 550. First pitch, 645.
The Road to October, sponsored by Show Me Opportunity and Show Me Institute on KMOX.
Well, by now, I think everybody knows what happened with the city-county merger, Better Together's plan, down in flames. Final nail in the coffin when Steve Stanger was indicted and he's heading to the Hooskow any day now. Pat Kelly with me this afternoon from the Municipal League. And the other alternative in all of this has always been the freeholder process, as it's referred to. And they're going to give it a stab and see what happens. Pat, how are you?
I am great. It's a beautiful hot day in St. Louis.
Yeah, I'm ready to get to cooler weather. I think a lot of us are. So, you know, I think that heading into what happened in the aftermath of the debacle with the, you know, Better Together plan, I think a lot of folks, including myself, thought, well, this freeholders deal really isn't going to, you know, manifest in anything serious. But I'm guessing that that is not the case. I know it's complicated. This is a lengthy process, but you've started this in earnest with the signature gathering, and you're, I guess you're setting this on its way at this point, right?
We are, and we're really excited. Really took a lot of effort from a lot of people getting out and collecting the signatures, and we're right on track to where we thought we would be when we started this in February, and we turned in the last petitions yesterday. So we're excited to get the process started.
All right, so what happens next, Pat?
So once the signatures are certified, which we're anticipating will probably be as early as this week on Friday, that starts a 10-day clock for the county executive and the mayor of St. Louis, so appoint 9 members each. And then those members have to be approved by the Board of Aldermen and the county council. And then shortly after that, within about a 30 or 40 day period, the Board of Freeholders are required to have their first meeting.
What kind of people will they be looking for, or should they be looking for?
Well, I think having talked to both the county executive and the mayor, I think they want to make sure that they have a diverse committee, you know, representing not only the different groups throughout St. Louis City and County, but also the different areas of the county geographically. But they also want to have people that understand our governmental structure and are people that are going to be able to, one, give the time to the Board of Freeholders. You know, it is going to be a true commitment for these members to serve on that committee. They may meet every week for up to a year, you know, dedicating their time and effort in putting a plan together.
So, you know, one of the issues, and let's talk about scope of what they can do here. I think one of the issues in the selling points, according to Better Together, and I don't think it worked with a lot of people, is that this had to be done in a constitutional way. I think a lot of people thought accurately they were doing an end run. As you might remember, I was open-minded to the idea because I thought that this was our shot at doing something different here in the region. I certainly understood the flaws of the Better Together plan. Maybe the concern with this moving forward is that it can't, and I think some of the folks backing Better Together felt that this freeholders plan, whatever results from it, is maybe not going to be enough to force change in the area. So can you speak to the scope and the limitations and what they can do?
Well, I mean, actually, with respect to governmental structure, the Board of Freeholders is really has a very broad brush. But Mark, I think we have to be realistic and, you know, sometimes change is slow. I'm hoping that the Board of Freeholders through this process will be able to use that input that they receive from the residents of both St. Louis City and County and put a plan together that people will support, that they can build a consensus for. I don't think it can be something that's going to have 3, 4, even 2 items in it, maybe. You know, it's going to have to be something that the people are going to have to accept and then use that as a building block for doing other things in the future. And, you know, I'm optimistic. You know, we met with a number, with hundreds of people over the last few months doing presentations and debates with Better Together. And the two questions that seem to be always asked, both while on stage and after and before the meetings, is why isn't St. Louis part of St. Louis County? And then the people on the opposite side would say, why should they be? And I think that should be a primary topic and a conversation that needs to be fully vetted and analyzed through this process.
But would this process potentially lead to any of the consolidation or elimination of some of the smaller municipalities or the police entities in the county?
Well, I think, you know, we're working, you know, we've worked to try to make improvements in policing through certification. You know, all but 2 of the police departments in St. Louis County now are pursuing accreditation. I think you're starting to see some of the smaller municipalities just out of sheer, you know, need, looking for other opportunities and possibly merging with other cities. You know, some of those things are going to happen on their own. But Mark, those aren't the true problems that we're facing. You know, if we had one St. Louis, one of the biggest advantages would really be economic development opportunities. You know, I think that our surrounding counties like the fact that St. Louis City and County are dysfunctional when it comes to working together. You know, we don't really use the clout that we should have as a St. Louis in order to attract some of the true economic, the big picture economic items that we could if we were one St. Louis. And then from that, then you start building on other things. And I think some of the things you're talking about will just happen naturally out of need. But I think we need to look at things that are really going to have a bigger impact than the consolidation of Vineta Park and Vineta Terrace.
Well, let me ask the question this way. Pat Kelly from the Municipal League. I hear this, and I think the listeners hear this all the time about One St. Louis and economic opportunities. And I don't think that particular part of what people are trying to achieve has really been marketed very well, because in a lot of people's minds, well, look, in my mind, I think people sit back and say, well, how is this going to make any difference at all when it comes to that? I don't know. It just gets confusing, Pat, because I don't know why you would not have economic opportunities. And where are we pitted up against one another where all of a sudden there would be kumbaya and we'd have other economic opportunities, which, by the way, could still cut out if we're talking about being a region. I've heard this idea tossed in. Well, we're not really a region if we're not including Jeffco and in St. Charles County and Madison County and in places like that.
Yeah, well, and every region has multiple counties. You know, I mean, you know, you look at Nashville, they want to compare us to different areas, but they're within a metropolitan statistical area as well. But I don't think we use that to our advantage. And I'll just give you an example. You know, a year and a half ago when the NGA was looking to try to stay in St. Louis and St. Louis City was fighting tooth and nail, it wasn't just Illinois that we're fighting against. It was St. Louis County. And we had one economic development partnership at the time. And yet the county executive was working to try to move that location to Fenton. So those are the kinds of things that I think really hold St. Louis back. And that's what I meant by that dysfunctionality that historically we've had when it came to those big economic items. That's why the football Cardinals left, because St. Louis couldn't decide where they were going to put the stadium at that time, whether it was going to be in St. Louis County or St. Louis City. And, you know, so we need to work together on those kinds of things and really just to make our whole region, meaning St. Louis, stronger.
Well, and I understand that, but I think even under some system where you have the county and the city not working and pitted up against one another, you're still going to have issues that will pit Fenton and other areas against the city. So that's where I think you're going to have to do, and this certainly existed with Better Together too, a little bit more convincing for people to really understand that.
Right, and I mean, you're always going to have those, Mark. I mean, you know, Chicago has, you know, different areas of their city that are going to have disputes against it, but you still have one leadership, and I think that's what's important. And I think, again, you know, if the city were to reenter the county as a municipality and we have one county executive and who could really bring people together, we would have an opportunity to do a number of things in the future.
And then quickly, Pat, because I'm running short on time here, what's the realistic timetable for any votes?
So I really believe, Mark, in looking at the Constitution and some of the requirements in there about, you know, 70 days before or after a general, or you cannot have it 70 days before or after a general election and a primary. Realistically, I think you're really looking at the second half between June and December of 2021.
That sounds a little bit more realistic than what I've heard about 2020. So that sounds like it makes more sense. The time goes by quickly. We know that. Pat, thanks a lot.
It does.
And it's exciting to at least get the process started, see where it takes us.
And we're excited too, Mark. Thanks.
Take care. We'll talk soon.
Okay, bye.
Pat Kelly with the Municipal League with me this afternoon. St. Charles County Executive Steve Ellman. I'm not really familiar. I guess I've seen some of these signs about Kratom, K-R-A-T-O-M. It's an issue in St. Charles County. We'll explain it coming up. Tim Wentworth from Express Scripts, and he's handling the United Way campaign. We're leading the charge on that for 2019 coming up after 3 o'clock. So I invited the county executive of St. Charles County on this afternoon. Steve, how are you?
Fine, Mark.
You know, this was a topic when my producer, Fred, came to me and said, would you like to speak with Steve Ellman? I said, of course, I always want to talk to Steve Ellman. This Kratom stuff sort of caught me off guard because I was not even familiar with the product at all. So maybe we should start there. And what is it?
Well, you know, I was not familiar with it either until Dr. Mary Case, who's the medical examiner for St. Charles County and most of the other counties in the region, came to us along with Dr. Sarah Riley, who works with her. She's a toxicologist. And they came out and told us about some of the things that they had discovered over the last year with regard to, I think there was 13 different cases where people who they had examined after death had this substance, Kratom, in their system, and two of them, that was the only thing they had in their system. So this was they were able to discover this only in the last year because of some new testing equipment, which they now have. So they made us aware of this problem, and that's the first time I had ever heard of Kratom. And it's a substance that's grown in Southeast Asia, and it's been around for centuries, I guess. But is relatively new to the market. But if you've driven down the street lately, you may have noticed a bunch of shops going up. I saw a new one today in my old neighborhood that I grew up in, advertising Kratom for sale.
Interesting. And, yeah, so not unlike the CBD, and maybe sold or marketed in a similar way, right?
It's not like CBD. I think CBD is a cannabis-related product, and this is a member of the opioid family.
Yeah, I guess what I'm saying is I was comparing it. Maybe that's not the best way to do it, though, in the sense that it's being marketed in a way that relieves some of the same things that maybe CBD would, but certainly a different particular substance. Now, when it comes to the bill that was passed, this is where it gets confusing, and I have a little bit of I don't have as much time as I had hoped here this afternoon, Steve. So the bill that was passed by the board that you, I guess, sort of let go into effect without your signature would have done what and sort of does what?
Well, the biggest thing that it does is to go ahead and have some labeling requirements. When we first looked into this, before I put a bill before the council to actually ban it, as five states have already, we went ahead and went to a store and bought some of this in a jar.
Yeah.
It had no the labeling. There was no labeling. It didn't say what the proper dosage was, so you didn't know how much to take. When we asked them how much to take, they said, well, just start taking some. If you take too much, the worst can happen is you get an upset stomach. And it also didn't have any information about where it was made. So if you had an adulterated batch, there was no way to track it down and find out who else might have some. I mean, it just violated every kind of consumer protection that you might imagine. So one of the most important things in this bill is labeling requirements, and they will have to go ahead and basically say that it's not regulated. And that's the most important thing here, Mark. You know, they have – the FDA goes ahead and regulates drugs, and everybody's read or seen – products that are, quote, FDA approved. And I don't want anybody to think because we haven't banned this that somehow Kratom is now St. Charles County approved.
Yeah.
It's not. And what we require them to say is that it's not regulated. We also require them to say that taken in combination with certain other medications, it can have very negative effects. Make sure that they tell people it affects the mu opioid receptors in the brain. And again, the council was not willing to ban this because they just didn't think they had enough information one way or the other. So we didn't ban it, but we don't want anybody to think that somehow because we didn't ban it, we are somehow now saying it's okay. Go ahead.
I hear something amazing. Maybe I shouldn't be surprised by this. In the local papers coverage of this, they mentioned something called the American Kratom Association. So they have a lobbying group that estimates 15 million people consume the substance in the U.S. Again, this caught me off guard because I'm not dialed into Kratom, but you're right. Now that I think about it, Steve, I have seen some of those signs that are out there. So I appreciate you coming on here to sort of straighten out what you did in St. Charles County. And I'd be shocked if this isn't one of those things, since we're talking about vaping, that isn't, you know, maybe handled on a more national level in the future as well.
Well, it needs to be. And our information is that the FDA is still studying this. And it'd be great if they came out tomorrow and told us, you know, either it is or it isn't harmful, and then we can move on to other things.
Yeah, that'll make it easier. At least St. Charles County Executive Steve Ellman with us this afternoon. Thanks, Steve. I appreciate it.
You bet, Mark. See ya.
All these crazy things out there that people are affected by. 256. Man, I'll tell you what. I'm going to just telegraph my cut of the day right now because I've been wanting to get into this Shane Gillis stuff. That didn't take long, of course, after the blow-up over the weekend with the new cast member at SNL because he said something that offended a few people. They didn't have the guts to keep him on the cast, so they canned him. But there are some comedians like Bill Burr, one of the best out there. I mean, look, the guys that are really good, like Chappelle and Bill Burr, and a handful of others, Jim Jeffries, are defending this guy because they are sick and tired of the PC nonsense as well. There's a lot of people that don't have the guts, apparently, including Lorne Michaels. We'll get into that in the next hour. Also, Tim Wentworth from Express Scripts. He's also handling the United Way campaign. That's coming up.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.